RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, in the context of New Zealand's plans to deregulate GMOs and biotechnology, we thought we'd like to hear about the UK's experience and what has happened since this deregulation took place last year and the forthcoming secondary legislation, let's call it, for new GMOs labelled as precision breeding. Now, Leonie Nimmo, who is beaming in from West Yorkshire, UK, is the president of GM Frees. It's an anti-GMO non-profit formed in 1999. Its members include large national charities, small specialist organisations, scientists, farmers, retailers and grassroots campaigners. Leonie, welcome to our program. Thanks for coming on.
Hi.
Okay, so just to get this in the right order, the legislation that or deregulation that's already taken place, what's the form of that?
So an Act of Parliament was passed last year in March, which sort of paves the way for the deregulation of certain forms of genetically modified organisms. So, but the detail of how that would actually work in practice was pushed into the secondary legislation, which we've yet to have. So really key issues such as labelling, traceability, risk assessment, safety testing, all of these things were left to the secondary legislation, which we've not had.
Yeah, why were they left, do you think?
There's kind of quite big issues involved in that. I mean, the secondary legislation isn't subject to the same parliamentary scrutiny as primary legislation is. So it's something that we're seeing quite a lot in the British legislative process these days, is that a primary piece of legislation is passed with very, very little detail in it. And then and obviously that's kind of debated quite a lot in Parliament. But the details are kind of left to the secondary legislation, which are then not debated as much, or if at all. So, and that it also has implications for the devolved nations of Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, because they kind of lose the ability to have an impact on that secondary legislation. So it's a kind of bigger issue than just.
Is that some kind of tactic? Because it would make sense if you wanted to sort of open the door to something that you come through with something quite general. And then once that's in place, whatever comes afterwards is kind of there's a free pass or an open door, because it's assumed that all that work was done first up when it wasn't.
Yeah, I think that you've described that really well. Yeah, that's kind of what.
Well, that's a bit sneaky then, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So after the initial legislation was passed, the secondary legislation was being left to government agencies to draft. And in the UK, that's the Department for Food and Rural Affairs and the Food Standards Agency. So they were kind of they drafted this secondary legislation. And I think that the announcement of the general election in May took them by surprise, because they were expecting that the legislation they were drafting to just kind of sail through Parliament in the wake of the Genetic Technology Precision Breeding Act. So the primary legislation that was passed last year. But when the general election was called, the kind of shutters went up. You know, we were almost expecting the secondary legislation to be placed in front of Parliament, you know, really soon. But suddenly, neither organisation was saying very much, and they had to kind of wait to find out what was going to be the steer from the new government and whether they could expect it to pass in the same way. So since the new government came into power, they were initially quite quiet, but more recently we've been hearing very pro new GM statements coming out of the new government, and they are intending to pass the secondary legislation. Whether it will be in exactly the same form as it was under the previous government, we still don't know, but it is looking quite likely.
Was any of this issue part of the election campaign? I'm assuming not.
No,
if it was, it was very low down.
It's just not on the public radar, really, in the UK these days.
Did Labour have a policy that was clearly defined, which they might be looking like they're kind of going against now? I don't know.
No, I mean, some Labour MPs were asking the right questions when the primary legislation was going through Parliament, or asking some of the right questions, and, you know, had picked up on some of the bigger issues. But there wasn't, like, a clear party position. Although, yeah, I guess the kind of party line was maybe more around, yeah, we want innovation in the food system and, you know, this kind of...
They all say that. They say that here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the go-to.
So they certainly didn't come out right and say this needs, hey, we need adequate protections in place if this stuff is going to be, you know, released. It tended to be more supportive than. But yeah, yeah, having you know, with certain people sort of asking some probing questions, one of whom is somebody who's become now quite a significant minister, Daniel Zeitner. But again, he made some very pro new GM statements at an agri-biotech event recently, so that was kind of worrying.
This term precision bred, and I from what I can see, the definition of that is could have resulted from traditional processes.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It's really interesting because, you know, so much of the rhetoric is, oh, you need to be pro-science. And, you know, like there's this real kind of, hey, we're the science, you know, we're on the side of science kind of rhetoric. But how unscientific is that definition? You know, well, anything could happen, couldn't it? It's like, you know, pigs might fly, like, It's just a sort of, in a sense, it's not a scientific definition.
It's a Trojan horse, isn't it? Because how can precision have anything to do with could have? So
yeah.
Could have is, again, it's a free pass, isn't it? It might not have been, but it could have been.
Exactly.
Therefore, we're going to go crazy gene editing everything and say, well, nature could have thrown this up. There was a chance.
Yeah, exactly. There was a possibility. It's like, well, what's the probability of that happening? You know, have you tried to disprove that hypothesis? You know, it's essentially, it's not a scientific definition. It's a political construct which enables, which could enable the wholesale deregulation of gene edited and other forms of genetically modified technologies.
Because when it comes to the consumer, I believe that this kind of approach will exempt precision bred from any kind of regular labelling or
warning. That's yet to be decided, but yes, it is likely. If under the secondary legislation as it was being drafted by the former government would have meant that it wouldn't need to have been labelled or traceable or adequately risk assessed or, you know, with any sort of environmental impact assessment. But yes, I mean, precision breeding, it's neither precise nor is it breeding. You know, it's an incredibly misleading term, which is defined in a completely unscientific way.
Well, if you think of editing, though, you can kind of get that precision feeling across to people because they can imagine this white-coated person under lab conditions with high-powered microscopes doing this incredible editing, and they know what editing is.
I mean, editing is also a very loaded term, you're right. And the sort of which kind of brings to mind a very precise process, but actually, you know, we know that there are sort of unintended consequences that come with these techniques. And there's a lot that we don't know about the resulting organisms, you know, and because of the way that, that they will be defined and assessed, there's a lot that we won't know about the organisms as well. I mean, it could be the case that the government decide to have things like whole genome sequencing when you can look at the full impact of the process. But we're not going to be requiring that, or at least it's unlikely that we're going to be requiring that the whole organism is assessed for any unintended consequences within the whole organism, rather than the intended consequences. So as it was being devised under the former government, the secondary legislation would have just meant that developers had to talk about the intended impacts that the techniques that they were using were going to have.
The happy talk.
So they don't have to look for any unintended impacts. So we're not going to know, you know.
Okay. Gene editing, well, that conjures up visions of creating GM animals. It's possible, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's next level.
I mean, under the former government,
level.
This was absolutely on the cards. However, that is one thing that the current government does look like it's going to push back on. It's not going to bring forward gene edited animals within the same sort of timeframes that the previous government was looking at. I guess that's the one change that we already know about with the new government, that there won't be. Under the previous government, they were going to bring forward secondary legislation for plants. Almost, you know, back in May it was looking ready, and then they had a kind of time frame shortly after that for animals as well. But now we're not sure how that's going to pan out with animals.
You've been battling away for quite some time. I mentioned the start of GM freeze, 1999. I'm just wondering. Maybe you've been there all the way, but certainly a substantial part of the way. How do you think, from that point in time to now, and knowing that it's really only a promotion of GMOs that really gets the airtime, especially in mainstream media, let's say, positive stories, where do you think people are on this issue? Where's the public? I mean, awareness is one thing, but where do you think they... Do you think that people buy this, you know, can't miss out on evolving technology and progress and all of that and feeding the world? Or do you think it's an innate thing in people to be suspicious of this sort of stuff? And what have you seen over that time? Has there been a development in consciousness towards it, opinion about these things?
What? Yeah, it's a completely different scene in terms of public awareness. I mean, there was a huge mobilisation against GMOs, 20 years ago. It was a major issue for the public. Fast forward to today, and there's very, very little public awareness or critique of this stuff within the media. So, ask a 20-year-old and they might not even know what genetic modification is. And as the government has done, ask the public what precision breeding is, and when they first asked, well, nobody knew because they just made it up, But when people do sort of start to understand a bit more, wherever you fall on that spectrum of, well, potentially there's some positive applications of this too. This is categorically bad. It's interfering with evolution is just not a good idea. The public want labelling. They want to know where it is. They at least want the freedom of choice. So, successive polls have shown that average, 75%, three quarters of people always say that they want labelling, regardless of whether that's precision bred or GMOs. So, there is a very, very strong preference for labelling if people are kind of asked about it and kind of are given a chance to understand it a little bit more. It's a massively different operating environment to when GM freeze was launched back in 99.
Well, if there was something that was so stunning success-wise, you'd never hear the end of it. I haven't heard anyone trumpeting this huge success story. They'd hammer it like crazy. It's just not there.
Yeah, I mean, but it's incredible that the same sort of stories are being told about the potential for this stuff that was 20 years ago.
It's always the potential.
You know, oh, it's gonna decrease pesticide use and feed the world and all of this. You know, the rhetoric hasn't changed, and we know that that's just not the case. In fact, the opposite has been shown to be true.
Do you see these two sides, worlds, whatever, coexisting? Is there a way to operate this technology, to develop it, to grow it, and, you know, have the sort of the walled off areas protected? So, you know, there isn't cross contamination because no one can guarantee that ever. All sorts of other issues. Yeah. Organics industry could be decimated with just one event, possibly. You know, you just don't know. So do you think the two can coexist? You mentioned labelling, traceability, all that. But in the end, it's a one or the other, or is some way that it can both operate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously sort of that depends on the scale of the release. But, yeah, I think you're right. You know, every time that there's been the development of a GM crop, there is always contamination. For example, bees travel a distance of 5 kilometres in either direction. You know, you're not going to get a situation where there's a kind of containment space which is five, you know, that kind of size. You know, there will always be contamination. I think, but I've sort of been trying to probe that question of, well, okay, well, so do you get an exponential spread, or does the spread kind of drop off? You know, does it kind of increasingly spread? And I think from what I can work out, it's dependent on the case by case situation and the type of crop, and it's not really possible to give a categorical answer there. But you know, you did just touch on the fact that I think that quite often these organisms just aren't very successful. So I guess that there is that kind of.
But on the other side, that's a good point. If someone holds a patent, because it's always a chase for a patent in the end, and the intellectual property rights for, let's say, a crop that really is incredible, does amazing things, or is resistant to everything that was ever designed for, yada, 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 that would then end up dominating the natural world because of its advantages would be so much more over the... You know, the natural version, which takes far longer to update its kind of evolution,
I think one of the questions is how similar that those crops are to the local land races. So it will depend on like how easily they would breed to the local varieties of those crops. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, genetic diversity is at threat, and actually we know that we really need genetic diversity, you know, in order to avoid chemical intensive forms of agriculture. That is what, you know, we've already got the science that we need to understand what we, you know, how to avoid really chemical intensive forms of agriculture, and that's diversity. You know, we need to have crop diversity, and we need to have diversity within species, and that is what genetic modification in all forms threatens. And the kind of idea that, oh well, if we develop this stuff, we can use less chemicals. If the development of that stuff means monoculture, it will always mean more chemicals, because nature finds a way. You know, if you might get rid of one pest, but then another pest will ride in its place, and then you need to start stacking all these different kind of resistant or pesticide traits on top of each other. And
it never ends, potentially, right?
It never ends. I mean, somebody sent me a page of the Biosafety Clearinghouse where there's kind of information on specific GM crops that are being released. And there was an incredible array of different organisms within one crop, and you just think, well, this is a complete mess. It was like a mess of loads of different species and kind of traits, and yeah, it didn't look good, basically. Like, no.
So what are the bottom lines at this point for GM freeze, as people here now think about?
Our bottom line is that we want a moratorium. You know, we want the development of this technology to stop until we understand a lot more about it. In practice, what we campaign on day-to-day basis for is adequate regulation, because we at least need to be able to know where this stuff is and trace it, and in order to be able to manage the risks. So that's kind of what we're doing more on a day-to-day basis. But we're also kind of tracking sort of new developments in genetic technologies as well. So they're quite worrying developments in terms of genetically modifying microorganisms,
What are you talking about there? Like viruses and bacteria and things like that?
More to do with like soil microbes.
Okay.
So again, with an idea, well, sort of manufacturers arguing that this.
So they're going right to the level of the fine bits of the soil now.
Yeah. Yeah. And for things like, we can genetically modify the soil so that it can sequester more carbon, and ideas like that, or, so that we won't need to use as many pesticides or herbicides. The same kind of thing. But
we've heard that one a lot.
Yeah, we've heard. Yeah. But I mean, one thing that we really, really need is soil. Healthy soils are absolutely critical for our ability to produce food. And then to kind of push our sort of problem of carbon onto the soil and expect the soil to kind of...
Well, that's still just as debatable scientifically as GE. So, steady as hold on, go canny.
Yeah,
Don't get too excited.
The risks are really quite extreme, and another thing that we're starting to hear about is the combination of GM with AI. So black box biotech, so getting machines to design the life forms of the future. So there's
that's getting too crazy now. It really is.
It does sound crazy, but it is what's on.
No, I know it sounds it, but you could just imagine that's a full takeover of the biosphere.
Yeah, there's some really worrying stuff happening. So even though on a sort of day-to-day basis, we're campaigning in the sphere of sort of adequate regulation of the plants and animals that are going to be put on the market in the near future, we also need to keep our eyes open to other stuff that's coming further down the line, about which there is very, very, very little public awareness and even public debate. So it's really important that there's some sort of public discourse on this stuff in order for it to get a sort of general acceptance, that it's not just brought in completely under the radar without anybody knowing about it. And, some of this soil microbe, genetic modified soil microbes are already on the market in the States.
RFK Jr. might have something to say about that as he tries to make America healthier again. Who knows?
We'll see.
Okay. It's a bit of a ray of hope, but perhaps. Just a quick question. People here are becoming exercised about this issue. Is there any point in communicating with politicians, do you think? Do they listen? Do they take on board? Can they deliver anything? Because that's what people would say. We'll go talk to you.
I think there's always a point, and for me, there's always a point in trying to talk to whoever will talk to you, And certainly at this point in time, we're hoping that the kind of window between the two governments means that there's a change in personnel and that some people will be more responsive to the need for adequate protections on this stuff. So you never know. I think it's important.
Well, it seems from our view that you've got a rather dystopian set up in some respects there that don't seem to respect people's freedoms on certain things. Why would you expect them to care about what people might feel about this when it seems like you want to sort of play your part in rewiring nature and controlling the world? It kind of feels like that.
And under the guise of, the positive... of sort of all of these wildly optimistic claims that are made about it, about which there's no proof. I mean, it's really interesting that people that are critical of these kinds of technologies are always painted as kind of anti-science. But like,
that's right. Yeah,
whose science are we talking about? You know, ecology is a science, evolution is a science. You know, the massively complex sort of interconnected relationships between species, that's all scientific understanding. And yet, you know, we're told that science is all about sort of men in lab coats that can measure the chemistry of something that's in a petri dish. You know, there's a narrative behind this which I think really needs to be questioned. And you know, there is a really powerful social movement against this stuff, which is in the form of the food sovereignty movement. You know, people and especially, I think, when we're told that this is essential for feeding growing populations or whatever, you know, we need to look to the people that really are feeding the world and the small scale farmers that really are feeding the world and what they're saying. And what they're saying is, we need land. You know, we need unpolluted. Yeah. We need unpolluted land. We need access to water. We need access to seeds. And because genetically modifying seeds always leads to a concentration of power, you know, that's it kind of goes hand in hand with the concentration of power within the food system. And you know, people like the food sovereignty movement, people like Lavir Campesina, you know, a massive global movement of small scale food producers, of which there are chapters all around the world, you know, saying that but they don't want genetically modified seed. They want control of their own indigenous local varieties of seeds. And actually, genetic modification threatens all of that. Threatens the local diversity and genetic resources, like you say, by contamination. So, you know, it's really important to not kind of come along and go, oh, yeah, we white people, we know what you need. Us white people in lab coats can come and fix all your problems. You know, actually, that's not what people are saying. And we need to listen to them, you know. It's white colonial kind of attitude of, oh, well, our technology is going to fix the world, when you know, time and time again, you see that our technology messes the world up in the first place. You know?
Well, what it means is I get to leverage a patent and have an income stream and I don't have to have a product that even works necessarily. You mentioned small farmers, though there's the Labor Party are putting the inheritance tax in place, which could take many small farmers out. So maybe it makes sense to get rid of the small farmers, have the big corporates on, and they could all use GE modified and we can churn it out and everyone's happy.
Yeah, and we can all stop being farmers and eat lab-grown meat instead.
Yeah. Brave new world. It's been really interesting chatting with you, Leonie Nimmo from GM Freeze in the UK. Thanks for coming on, and we'll keep an eye out for what happens with this precision breeding. All right?
Yeah, thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.